So here's the start of the story from Joel Scholes from July 7th at WPR.org. Driven by hyperscale data centers, electricity demand in Wisconsin could increase by more than 40% by 2032. The finding, part of a new draft report by state utility regulators, means the state will need to build significant infrastructure to meet rising energy demands. Utilities say they'll be able to meet the spike with an all-of-the-above approach to energy generation, but consumer advocates and environmental groups are concerned Wisconsin utilities will do so at the cost of ratepayers while worsening the effects of climate change. This hour on the Lee Rayburn Show, we take a look at our electrical grid and its future with our expert guest, Robert Kuzner, who is a professor of electrical engineering and director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. If you have a question about our energy grid, how it works now, and how it might operate in the future, you can join our conversation at any time this hour by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. And Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's just start with some basics, and that would be about what I know of our energy grid. And it would have to start with, you know, our power plants. And then I know there are substations. I know there's transformers and a bunch of electrical cables that then connect to a meter in my house, and then I pay my bill. How do you explain our electrical grid in basic terms?
Well, that's really good, what you just said.
I know all this from paying the bill, but also when the electricity goes out, it's a substation that goes out or a transformer that goes out. And the debate seems to be about, you know, power lines and power plants.
Well, yeah, there's always a lot more focus on the generation, you know, in the public space. So, you know, we have, large sources of power generation that are, they generally, one of the key things is that all these pieces are owned by different people, which is an interesting complication, but generation's owned by the utilities. From the generator, kind of classically, you're going to step up the voltage. It comes out at a voltage level, which we call medium voltage, probably between around 4,000 and 30,000 volts. And then it gets stepped up usually so that it to the hundreds of thousands of volts so it can be transmitted. And so that's the transmission line part of everything to get the power from generation to, say, a substation. And then at the substation levels, they have transmission substations where you start to distribute out to different areas. And then as you get into more local areas, you've got the utility substations. And that's where you started.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty much in the, starts out around 34,000 volts. Get, say, a big building, you'd probably be coming in at that, or 24,000 volts, 15,000, depending on the area. And then inside it gets dropped down to the lower voltages that we operate on. And so I may end up talking about things in terms of the high voltage, medium voltage, and the low voltage. The low voltage is what we interact with, from 120 volts in our houses, 220, say 240, 220, 110 to 120 in the house. And then in buildings, you're going to be 208 or 480, and it's usually a three phase. So there's three wires. House has two wires coming in.
Rob, when we're talking about electricity, I know that demand fluctuates, that it's higher during the day, that it drops off at night, that there is the expectation that demand will increase in Wisconsin with the addition of data centers. How do these energy companies and our electrical grid currently meet these demands with our system?
Well, they basically have to increase their capacity. I guess that would be the first part, the capacity to deliver the power. That's maybe building new substations, adding more parts to the grid. But you know, you definitely start to get limited, especially as we're looking at data centers coming online. And so local generation is one solution to addressing this, where you could have local generation joining in with the utility power that's coming from some centralized generation source. And that's really kind of where the microgrid can play a role.
Local generation. And when we talk about these data centers, to go back to that WPR.org story from Joel Scholes, according to the PSC draft report, more than 72% of the peak electricity load that is expected over the next 6 years is associated with three active data center developments in the service territories of two Wisconsin utilities. So when we're talking about local generation, does that mean local power plants or does that mean local renewable energy? What does local generation look like when we dig into this microgrid, Rob?
Well, there's two. I say the more conventional is something would be called cogeneration, and you have these kind of local power plants that augment generation in a local area. A microgrid allows you to combine a lot of different sources together in a very integrated fashion, and you can bring the renewables in. And also, you know, I got to mention that even at the utility level, they're trying to deal with this increased demand by bringing in diversity of power sources. So that's solar and wind. So there's utility-owned solar farms being constructed. Those can help, you know, provide additional generation capability. The challenge is, though, getting that power from point A to point B, especially as it starts to increase, and especially when you have, like with the data centers, you're going to have sudden shifts of power where it's going to be happening all the time. We're talking like sub-second. The power is going to come on and off and on and off. And that's really going to create stability problems and other things with the grid. And that can be mitigated by the local generation. But there, it really, the microgrid concept is better because you can really coordinate everything, and you can bring energy storage into the picture, and you can bring in different types of energy storage. So there's like energy, what they might call super capacitor based, where you can provide energy really quickly, but not for a long time. Energy technologies, and then you've got the batteries that can give you the kind of longer smoothing out capability. So I think with the data centers, you're going to see these architectures that combine all of these things together, and the upstream distribution to the data center would be a DC. So it would come in as AC, but then it would have to be converted to DC to more effectively bring integrate these multiple energy storage sources into play.
So, in basic terms, how do you define this microgrid? What are its parameters?
Okay, so I think it'd be a good idea to just say, well, what is a basic microgrid?
Yeah.
And so it's a potentially self-sufficient local power system, and it can combine, it will always include some local power generation. It could be a natural gas generators, diesel, Nuclear microreactors even are starting to become more viable. So those are your kind of spinning reserves that kind of mimic what's happening at the power plant generation level. And then you combine renewable energy sources. You can do that. So you can bring in the solar. You could have wind. And I'm really just talking about it electrically, because there's you can expand this into geothermal and things like that, but I'm not
sure.
I'm just going to focus on electrical. And then this system, all of these assets, they're usually procured from different vendors, different suppliers. Unlike a cogeneration plant, which it's like a huge construction project and everything, it's relatively, but also in a deceiving way, simpler to put a microgrid together. Because you just need to have the core of it is you've got to have the distribution system that can enable, and when I say distribution system, that's the cables and the wires, and a very, very important part is the circuit breakers and the disconnect switches and all that. This is extremely, and you know, a lot of people get bored by that, but it's really the core of everything working well. And then this equipment, it all needs to communicate somehow. And it needs to be able to operate kind of in a distributed way where everything can make, every piece of equipment can make its own decisions, but there can be a supervisory function, kind of a centralized control, and definitely kind of a central point where you can interact with it depending on the size of it. And then it needs to be able to connect to the grid or disconnect from the grid as needed. So it,
why would it need to disconnect from the grid? I could understand with a local power system and a distribution system that you may find that demand would exceed supply for these microgrids and would have to go to connect to the external system. But why would it disconnect, Rob?
Well, there's different, it really, generally, you don't want to disconnect.
Okay.
You want to stay connected. But if the grid goes down, it's going to operate in a disconnected configuration. It needs to go from that configuration to the other one seamlessly, so that the downstream customers are not seeing any impact.
Any outages? Would be outages,
no
right?
Outage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole idea that the microgrid can mitigate the possibility of poor power quality, which could stress, like, say, water treatment facilities.
Sure.
You've got pumps, you know, and you want them, if you get even dips in power, things like that, dips in the voltage that are happening, it can reduce the reliability of all the equipment, things like that. So microgrids are really good for just providing this smooth, continuous power to the customer. And then now we kind of expand that idea. There's a lot more I can talk about let me just mention one thing, and then I'm going to get this back to the data center. The biggest area where you're seeing increased deployment of microgrids is into remote areas where you are on the very edge of the distribution grid, which we call that maybe a weak grid. You know, we're up north here, northern parts of Wisconsin, say, and all the wires and everything coming from the utility, it's kind of at the end of that. And so installing a microgrid there can really strengthen that grid and give them the same kind of power quality, say, that we are enjoying in Milwaukee. And the other is, you know, remote areas like islands, things like that. And some of these areas you can't connect to the utility. So they have to operate disconnected all the time. And I worked on military bases, which are, and they're critical installations, really utilize microgrids, like military bases, hospitals, and overseas, some military bases, it's necessary to disconnect from the utility sometimes too, because some of the utilities are really become really unreliable. And so the system might operate better if it can just isolate itself. So this is all, everything I'm talking about is at from the customer perspective. But when you go to the data center, you really have to start thinking about the utility perspective, everyone else, because the customer being, say, the data center is going to create a lot of havoc for everyone around him. And so this is where the microgrid is really going to help mitigate that problem. So at a whole different level than the way microgrids have traditionally been applied.
Robert Kuzner, our guest, professor of electrical engineering and director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. And you can join our conversation about the future of Wisconsin's power grid at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can also email talk@wpr.org. Paul called but couldn't stay with us, Rob. He's wondering what you think about thorium nuclear power generation as a potential energy source.
Well, I'm not an expert on nuclear power generation. That's kind of really outside of my area, but I think it's like an advanced nuclear approach. I don't know. I know that I think that as we get to the microgrid and it's closer to the point of usage and the whole idea is to bring things online quicker and more reliable, they're not going to want to go into advanced areas as quickly, but to try to use proven technologies as much as they can and focus on making it smaller, more reliable and safe.
When I think of what you're describing here as these microgrids and the need for a local power system here, I also think of the not in my backyard, which seems to be, as part of a quality of life issue. Do you want the coal plant in your backyard if that's what's going to be your local power source? Or do you want a thorium nuclear power generator in your backyard if that's going to be your local power source? So if you're talking about these microgrids in terms of local power systems, I imagine, Rob, you're also talking about what you're willing to allow as a power generation source near your community or where this energy would be used.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of reasons that people tend to not like this near them because there's all these byproducts of power generation that you deal with, you know. But, you know, we're all benefiting from the increased power capability that we are gaining, you know, from it, either from, depends on what you care about it. If you care about, reducing impacts to the environment, renewables help in that area. If you want to have reliable power. So it's kind of, there's a lot of different areas you could go at to the impact, but I think that the microgrid gives you kind of it can be scaled at different levels. And so it gives you a lot of opportunities to work on those impacts and come up with solutions that will be less impactful to everyone around them. That's my opinion.
Is the Public Service Commission is the Public Service Commission and other utilities around the state, are they operating these microgrids currently? Are they considering them in the future, specifically for what we would see as the increased demand for data centers? What is the status of microgrids currently?
In Wisconsin, there are not a lot of microgrids, and most of them have been developed by other entities than the utilities. But I kind of have a little main ones here, but you know, there's the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, which combines solar arrays and biogas generation, you know, to ensure the water treatment is, and they use that for net zero usage. And there's, you know, at the other end of extreme, you have the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Tribe of Chippewa Indians, and they've got three independent solar plus storage microgrids that are functioning there. And there's a similar type of microgrid system in the village of Boaz and Richland County. But, you know, all these are independent efforts, you know, commercial efforts or government, public-private partnerships, really, that pull these together. You've got So as far as servicing people, there's a Madeline Island microgrid okay. to help you if you lose power from the main grid. You know, there's a few others that are really functioning to provide service. There's a really great demo of how a microgrid might work. If you go up to the Gordon Buchholz Nature Preserve in Appleton, you can see that and really learn a lot from that. But there's not a lot that I've been able to see that we're doing here in Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, Wisconsin. I asked this, Rob, because going back to the WPR.org story, utilities say they'll be able to meet the demand, increased demand that's coming with an all-of-the-above approach. And I wondered if the utilities see these microgrids as part of an all-of-the-above approach.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know that they're very... We're part of an industry university consortium, and We Energies is a very supportive member of that, and we address the consortium is for grid connected power electronic systems, which is what enables a lot of this technology. So they're engaged and with a lot of different organizations like ours to try to stay on top of the technology, and I'm sure that it's a challenge that they're working on, but. Microgrids just alone are complex systems, and mm-hmm. they're challenging to even get them to work well together and functioning. You know, it often takes longer than people anticipate.
So, but those microgrids inevitably have to connect to the macro grid, right? And to some degree, they probably mm-hmm. are working in concert at some level with each other. So as complicated as a microgrid would be, I would imagine the complications spread out as you go.
Yeah, I think I would say that the whole idea of the microgrid is really to decouple the two systems.
Okay.
Well, I don't think it's going to make things. If microgrids are done in coordination with the utility, they're going to have the highest degree of success, and support, you know, from a lot of different stakeholders. Is that because the microgrid is kind of an asset? It becomes an asset to the utility that can help them, mitigate the power demand.
Sure.
Everywhere else.
It makes a lot of sense. Our guest, Robert Kuzner, is professor of electrical engineering and director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. Taking a look at the potential for microgrids as being part of the future of what appears to be an increasing demand for electricity across Wisconsin, largely driven, at least according to the Public Service Commission's draft assessment of energy needs, by data centers that are coming coming online here. So what do you want to know about building these microsystems with local power systems and distribution centers and centralized control that yet has access that connects to the main system and yet can operate independently? There's also the idea of nanosystems, and we will look into that next with our guest Robert Kuzner when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.
Thank you.
taking a look at the potential use of microgrids for Wisconsin's future electric demand in our state. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Robert Kuzner, professor of electrical engineering and director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. And you can join this conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email talk at WPR.org. And Rob, John in Wausau called, couldn't stay with us. He was wondering why the data centers that appear to be the reason behind a large portion of this increased demand that Wisconsin is expecting, why can't they power themselves like military ships and submarines can? And you've had some experience with the U.S. military and electrical microgrids. So would the data centers be able to create microgrids of their own and be responsible for their own energy demands?
I actually think that is what's going to happen. I mean, that's the trend right now.
Okay.
And it is. I've worked on, military ship power distribution systems. And, you know, the architectures that they've been proposed, there's NVIDIA put out a really interesting white paper on a microgrid, 800 volt DC microgrid. If you Google that, you'll learn a lot about this. And that distribution system looks a lot like a ship, today's advanced ship distribution systems.
Huh.
There's a lot of synergy. Yeah. And it's not the kind of system that, say, the utility and even conventional suppliers of, I'll say, land-based equipment, because my whole career has been mostly out doing the ship stuff, mostly, that they're used to. You know, it's a very advanced, a lot more like what we're seeing on the ships. And so I'm certain that the people developing these new that's going to be part of the solution for any data center. They need that. They need to have this, as a minimum, this upfront mitigating distribution system to make their stuff work well and to keep the grid healthy, because if the grid, you know, it's not going to help for the grid to be less reliable because you're installing data centers.
Right.
You know, they're going to have to mitigate that.
Well, I saw even before the storms hit on Monday, when we were hot and humid throughout Wisconsin, We Energies, according to TMJ4.com, had nearly 21,000 customers without power after an equipment failure at a Northside substation, knocking out two feeder lines and creating what TMJ4.com says a heat-related concern for families. But after the storms on Monday, We Energies reported over 125,000 customers without power, a majority of those outages from Milwaukee, Kenosha, Outagamie, Winnebago, Calumet, and Racine counties. Would microgrids be able to mitigate outages like these, Rob?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
That is... in my opinion, the most important role of a microgrid, one of the very important roles, I'll say, because I mean, it really, electrical power, kind of like you mentioned, it's necessary to sustain human life. You know, we take it for granted, but it that we all have an electrical connection here in the U.S. And when you get these power outages, it reminds you, you know, how hard it is to function without it. So microgrids can be used. So weather events, the microgrid can take over and it can keep a whole community operational. It's a huge, it really, and in places like, there's a really weak area of transmission, the Goleta Pockets area in California, where it was very, very, they had a lot of, you know, fires and things like that. And there's been an effort there to, you know, kind of develop strings of microgrids all along this transmission line area to mitigate the possibility of these, to keep the public services online when things happen. And that was at like many, many cities at a macro scale, having your own microgrids to hold everything together. There's a big effort to get to that kind of a system out there.
You describe these microgrids as complex systems. What does it mean for, what does it mean for ratepayers? What would the cost look like for these complex systems, Rob?
Well, I feel there is maintenance costs associated with them, and that often people don't realize. And that's really just keeping the system functioning, even as technology changes and as equipment ages out and things like that. But those costs, if say for a community, mm-hmm. if you're bringing renewables and other things and a mix of energy, you can offset that cost, and you can basically, you know, reduce the overall energy costs to the community, and these systems could eventually pay. They will eventually pay for themselves if done right. And I think that's the big trend, is to try to make these systems more plug and play, simpler to get up and running, and to eliminate the like really expensive maintenance contracts with say companies that are like say Siemens or someone else that might have to be on site all the time to keep things running. So I think that those costs would all balance out, you know, over time. And with the improvements in technology, it's going to have a net benefit to everyone.
Let's go back to your questions now for our guest, Robert Kuzner, director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. And we'll go to Mark in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My question is sort of hard to state, but I'll try. What happens at the power plant when demand fluctuates? So, for example, at night when there's a lot less demand, does somebody turn off a bunch of generators to save fuel? Or could we save a lot of fuel by turning off all the streetlights at night?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Mark. What do we do to what does the power source do when it comes to meeting or fluctuating with demand?
Well, that's a great question, and it covers an area I think important to this. So they can bring new generation on when there's an increased demand, and they can take the generator down when the demand goes down, but you got to realize the time involved. And it's not just one entity that's involved in this process. So we have the utility, the owners of the generation. You've got the what they call independent system operators, and they're the ones that are constantly projecting the demand of usage. And, you know, they have to actually start the generator, get a new generator up and running like 12 hours before it's needed. That it's not on demand, it's hours. And they have to, the utility has to get permission from the independent service operators. There's a transmission line involved, they're part of this as well. And everyone's just monitoring and trying to predict a very slow system up on demand. So on the other side is what they would call load curtailment. And you could make systems smarter at the point of use and turn things off, you know, but it also can be, you know, that can be an annoyance to people as well, you know, I think we want to be often free to use our electricity. So there's a trade-off there, you know, you'd have someone else decide how much you can have turned on in your house, maybe even at a time. And there are countries where they have different systems where they'll actually curtail your power based on these kinds of objectives that you're mentioning.
Huh.
It's not really popular.
I don't think people would accept that for a moment, Rob. Mark, it's a great call, and I appreciate the question. And it does lead me to wonder, since this conversation sort of started with the increased energy demand expectations as a result of the data centers coming online in Wisconsin, what role artificial intelligence could play in microgrids, these complex systems, making them more plug and play, as you say, Rob, and control of fluctuation of energy from supply to demand?
It plays a huge role. And a lot of the research we're doing is in this area. And you want systems to be able, you put these systems together, and they're often built from different parts. It's almost like you can think of like a giant Frankenstein project, maybe, that you're going to try to, and you're going to try to make this thing operate like this sleek machine, you know, when it wants to. But then when it wants to go off and do and split itself up and do different things, that's where the AI really comes into play. And I really look at it from a resilience perspective. That's kind of my perspective that I can talk to more intelligently. It's what happens when things go wrong within a system that's being serviced by a microgrid. You know, like if there's a huge area of damage or something's breaking, some of the equipment, if there's a short circuit somewhere. And so the microgrids, they utilize a mix of technologies, power electronic technology, which is really good at shaping the energy usage and determining, you know, has a lot of inherent intelligence there, but it doesn't inherently work very well with the way our distribution systems are built with circuit breakers and everything else, which really kind of demand, they require an upstream thing to kind of break the, so that if, just here's the extreme in your house, if you get a short in your toaster, you don't want your whole house power to go down, you know? So you have this coordination that has to happen, and getting the power electronic converters that are interfacing to the, they call them inverter-based resources, the batteries, the solar, anything that's doesn't have a spinning generator, you need AI to help it interact with the distribution, especially at the extreme conditions when something bad is happening. And so, you know, we work on, you can have this smarts distributed all over the place. And it's kind of like, you can think, there's this idea of grid edge devices, and you can, it's basically, you can distribute intelligence at every point of connection here, and every single part of the system can make its own decisions, but it has to be able to learn over time. So it has to be trained on the data that it's constantly collecting and seeing, and then determining what the best response is and adapting. So that's where I see AI playing a huge role, making this whole system seamless. It also plays a huge role in designing these systems because they're quite complex. So I'm working on AI-based design tools because you have plans that all have to come together, and we've got to reduce the development time. So you can use the AI there to really help bring these systems up online faster.
Rob Kuzner, our guest, the director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems. And you mentioned inverter-based resources, and there's an email here from Glenn who says, local inverter-based generation like solar panels and batteries, those sources used in microgrids, can create significant synchronization problems. How would grid operators keep these local courses from destabilizing the entire grid as they cut in and out? Is this exactly what you're talking about with AI, or are there other tools involved, Rob?
Well, AI plays a role, okay? Mm-hmm. But regulations play a very critical role there,
okay,
too. And one of the things is these inverter-based, so the stabilization of what's happening the inverter-based resources, they have the capability of stabilizing locally. And they just, it's the developers of this equipment, you know, do they have the ability to integrate these types of technologies? And is there a demand for them to do it? You know, the other thing, and this is an even more really serious issue with inverter-based resources that our group specializes in, it has to do with kind of a radio interference between inverter-based resources and all of the stuff around it. And the name for this is supraharmonics. And so there are standards and regulations that control the quality of power, but those regulations only apply up to about 2,000 hertz on the frequency spectrum. And then there are electromagnetic compatibility standards that are regulated in order to operate in this market, but they don't begin until 150 kilohertz. And so you've got this band of unregulated noise, and that's actually where most of the byproduct noise of the inverters exists, and between 2,000 and 150,000 hertz. And so this is a problem that really needs to be addressed. It can cause light flicker. It can cause failure of equipment in substations, transformers, sensing, monitoring.
And the way to address that would be through regulation, Rob?
I think that regulation would help. Yeah, because it drives up the cost of the equipment to, if you're going to have the suppliers bring it into compliance. Right now, I think everybody who's being affected by it is putting a lot of effort into mitigating the problem. Like the transformer suppliers for big solar and wind farms, you know, they're kind of absorbing this. So, you know, buildings addressing some of the impacts, redesigning the way that the terminals at the substations to address the possibility of this stuff reducing the life. It's definitely can be mitigated. It's just a cost thing, you know.
Yeah.
If you go onto a shipboard system or an aircraft system or something, the standards are different and they address the whole range, you know, but you have to put additional filtering and things like that onto the equipment.
Never would have considered that. Let's go next to Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I have a question. I keep getting these advertisements on my phone for a device that's supposed to cut your electric use in half, or cost in half, I should say. And it has to do with dirty electricity. I've never heard of dirty electricity, and it sounds like somewhat of a scam. Is there such a thing as dirty electricity?
Rob?
There definitely is. I mean, that's what I was just talking about. We talk power quality, but it is pretty well regulated. But when you have a lot of things, you're starting to bring more of this kind of inverter-based generation online, it's going to, you can say, maybe pollute the grid. But I would be very skeptical about these. I see these things popping up all the time when I'm trying to watch YouTube or something like that, and I really am extremely skeptical of it. So I don't think that's where I am right now on that. You know, this is a really macro level problem, and people are working on it. And I think people who build the structure for solar and wind farms, they're really kind of ahead of the game on this. They're really working hard on it. The utilities and the transmission line operators companies are really trying to understand the problem. There's a lot of like switchgear providers, people like that. They're trying to get their head around it. So I think it's not as bad as these advertisements are saying. Here, we've got it pretty good here so far in the U.S. So I'd just be really careful about that.
Craig, thank you for the call. Is there a Jed emailed? He wants to know if there's a limit to how much clean energy can be loaded into the grid. Are there limits in talking regulation? Is there some draw the line, or is there some technical reason there?
Well, I'm assuming now we're talking about, you know.
I'm sorry. Yeah, inverter based generation. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and environmentally, you know, there. If you are installing it at the like a power plant generator, you know, like utility owned, those are big projects, and there are kind of inherent limits there, you know, because they're really limited by the distribution system, the ability to bring that on and deliver it. But if you start thinking about kind of the microgrid concept at different scales, I would say that there aren't limits. You know, there are how much space do you have, right?
Sure.
What's the thermal demand? So, I mean, these are the real limits. And I think the real trend is we need to understand how to reduce the thermal impact. We need to be able to figure out how to reduce the spatial impact, how much space it's taking up, how much heat it's generating, how it's using what are the resources you're going to use to cool it? Those are the challenges. And sometimes, you know, how heavy everything is too. And that's an area we do a lot of work on. I think there's a lot less attention to that for what I'll just say, land-based equipment, because you just find some space and let's put it together. But I think that the future, there's going to be a huge amount of attention on these things.
I can certainly see that. With a few minutes that we have left here, Rob, we've talked about microgrids this past hour, but I also see the term nanogrids. Could you describe those?
Yeah, nanogrid is a smaller microgrid that it's usually part of a large microgrid. So we actually worked on, as a good example, with the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, and Expeditionary Warfare Center down in Port Hueneme. We're working on nanogrid-based microgrids. And these were based on ideas that we based on the work we were doing on ship systems, which can kind of divide and conquer the electrical problem. So you can build a smaller nanogrid where it's needed, and then you start building it up, each little nanogrid, into a larger microgrid. And the nanogrids all operate, they're distributed in their control, but they operate like one system. And then if something goes wrong, the system can literally isolate the problem, and you can share energy between the nanogrids to keep the whole facility, you know, maximize the operability of the whole facility. So nanogrids are really an exciting concept, and I think it's a future way of addressing the cost and the time that it takes to get these complex systems up and running. Build small pieces of it where you can, but have the ability through grid edge and AI-based approaches to have them work together when you start bringing them and connecting together onto a distribution system.
And the way you describe it, Rob, seems completely opposite from where I started the conversation with our current energy grid, where you've got these big, massive power plants and they slowly, you know, divide energy down until they get to the energy, the individual consumer. And for these nanogrids, that nanogrid-based microgrids, you have, you know, the smaller power generation, the smaller transmission distribution systems, all building on each other, coordinating with each other. And it seems like there is, it's a different direction to go with energy entirely. And I very much appreciate you sharing your work, research, and knowledge with us today. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you. And you nailed it.
It makes sense. I really do understand where you're coming from. And it's something I'm sure to investigate. Rob Kuzner, director of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Sustainable Electrical Energy Systems at UW-Milwaukee. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.